listening to the AI in Motion podcast with JP Morgenthau.
Hi there, I'm JP Morgenthau, and I'm your host for AI in Motion, the podcast that's everything about AI and supply chain management and manufacturing. You know, I have been doing these past few episodes with guests, and I actually had a guest fall through, but I wanted to get out some content in the month and talk about some of the stuff that I'm finding and hearing in the general market when I speak to different individuals, experts, CIOs. And, you know, what I'm having a real hard time with is really getting to the meat of the topic, which is the struggle to get past generic high-level information, find real concrete, real-world implementations of AI making a difference. I hear a lot of the, you know, supply chain futures, right? Oh, it would be great for this. Oh, it would be great for that. Yet the examples I'm finding are really just more advanced forms of what we were doing with RPA and IDP, which was, you know, reading an invoice or a shipping document and doing automatic compares and reconciliation. And what I'm not really hearing is a difference maker. And we know the difference makers exist. We know they're possible. And what that tells me is that perhaps you have the wrong people driving these initiatives. Now, one of my past guests actually made a really intelligent statement, which is most likely businesses are going to leverage products with AI embedded in it in order to implement these solutions. And I agree that for a majority of them, that is the case. That would be a smart approach. This is really complex stuff. But there are organizations out there that have been, you know, they have analytics and data scientists on staff that have been analyzing the data. And frankly, what they've been doing is, you know, doing some very simple baseline, typical, you know, statistical analyses, and then generating Tableau dashboards. And, you know, those people are valuable. They help us to have more insight into the data and present it visually. But this is not the team that has the skills to go build a multi-agent or a multi-agent agentic system, right? Because that is a distributed computing background. That is somebody who has studied in building systems that have multiple components that are communicating, that are sharing state. And it's somebody who's actually built and deployed these and managed these type of systems. It's not the individuals who you have been having to build your Tableau dashboards. Okay, if you're doing that, in all honesty, you're playing solitaire with a half a deck. All right, so just know that, okay, as an executive, that if that is where you're headed, and if you're using that staff to try to get you your next level of advancement in leveraging these tools, that is not the path that you want to be following, right? And the other path that I see people following is hiring academic researchers. Look, they've been in a lab. They've done some good work. They understand the stuff at a very deep level, no doubt about it, but they know nothing about business. They live in a lab for the past 10 years, doing their PhD. They can do some really unique machine learning models, but what they don't understand is how that relates to business. Let's go back to, you know, just basics, right? Elliot Goldratt and the goal. Right, what is the goal of manufacturing? Let's say, right, it's to make money. I have my goods, my raw materials, right, and my capital outlay, and I have to turn that into a profit. Anything that stands in the way of generating that profit is a bottleneck or a constraint, right? And so, what I want to really do, I want to see AI excel, is figuring out what those bottlenecks and constraints are, why they're there, and then advising the organization on how to change it. You know, moving towards that autonomous enterprise, if you will, right? And it's possible. It's not hands-off. It's not without human intervention. But there is a lot more that AI could be doing in this scenario. let me walk you through, because this is where I come from. Like, let's get real, right? What does it take to do this? And so let's start with understanding that this is both process and data. And if you're not, your data house isn't in order, you're not going to be able to accomplish this task. You need to get your data house in order, and you need to have your people be able to understand and document the processes that you have in your business, which, by the way, as I have found over my years of automation, is a lacking area as well. Most organizations have not well-defined documentation of their processes. And so this is a great opportunity to do that. Why? Because let's start with the most basic things that AI can do really well for you today. And that is help you generate this documentation. It can capture data at various points within a process. It can take the information about what somebody knows about that process and generate content for a knowledge base. It can help you generate SOPs. It can help you to understand the various steps within a process from a visual standpoint. So you can actually record a video of it being done and have it understood by an LLM. So these are just some basic things that it can do today. But let's say that you really want to get into, you know, training your warehouse managers and analyzing what they're doing today and using AI to advise them on things that they could do better. Now, what is it going to take for you to get that done, that there? Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to identify what is the main KPI that you're looking to change. Is it time to put away? Is it time to pick? Is it the number of trips that are required to move items from various shell space into the point of picking? Is it the way the trucks are located and getting things off the truck and stuff is sitting too long on the receiving dock and that's blocking up other trucks from getting in? There's all kinds of great scenarios. How about how your procurement team is negotiating with vendors? Okay, these are all great examples. So you have to pick what KPI you want to start with. What KPI is going to be the one that you want advice on? Next, right, you have to build your value stream process. You have to identify the end-to-end steps that are taken in the generation of that KPI. And you have to break down each one and understand its input and its output at that stage and how long it's taking. And that's going to be you putting some sensors in place, capture the data. If it's something that can't be done with an automated sensor, you're going to have to build a program that has users or humans that are actually manually helping to capture that information. Okay, now after some time and you've been analyzing these processes, so let's say for 30 days, right now you're going to, you're going to take that data, and here's, you might just throw it at an LLM just to see what happens. Zero shot, right? Give me some advice. Here's my metrics. Here's the KPI. I'm trying to get faster at this. I'm trying to get better at that. Here's my data that I captured. Here's my value stream process with the times, for start and end of individual tests. Tell me what you think I could do better. You never know. These LLMs today have a tremendous body of knowledge. The corpus is huge. It might actually give you something of value. So zero shot. Sure, why not? But assume that, that isn't the be-all, end-all, right? The next step is you won't need to do some pre-processing on that data. You actually want to do some statistical analyses that you want to present with the raw data to the LLM to help guide it. Okay, there are things you know about your business that are not generic. So you might as well incorporate that into the knowledge that you're handing to the LLM. For example, you only have three bays. That's it, right? So that knowledge about your warehouse and how it's structured and how far the door is from the actual shelves and things like that. These are pieces of information that you can add context so that the LLM, the inference engine, can actually make better use of your information. Okay, next. Now you're going to hand that data off, and then you're going to be able to then say, okay, now, given these three, four pieces of information, I've given you the raw data, my value stream inputs and outputs. I've given you my layout of my warehouse, which, by the way, you can provide visually if you have a schematic of that. Right? You can hand that to the LLM these days, and it will make that, it will, you know, introduce that into the corpus and it will evaluate it. You will give it, your statistical analyses based upon what you've seen in your business and what works and what doesn't, right? And so it's going to take these various pieces of information, and then it's going to provide some feedback to you that you can then analyze and determine for yourself whether or not this is good advice, right? And so if you think that you've hit upon the right set of information, the right inputs, and you like what's coming out, right, then you can, every 30 days, run this job and send the output over to the warehouse manager. This to me, and then, we're in a cycle. So hopefully the warehouse manager will start to then implement process change, and then you watch for that over the next 30 days and see if you're starting to see improvement in that KPI. That is the use of AI in the process, making value, delivering value today in a very real world way, not a futuristic way, but a very real way that does not really, it's not overly complex, okay? You don't need to get super fancy, right? Some basic process management tools and that it connect to a LLM subscription, and any of them really for this process is really good. OpenAI, ChatGPT, Claude, Copilot are all great for at least getting involved, getting into this process. Over time, you may find that one has better knowledge of supply chain management and logistics than others, which is okay, right? Google Gemini, these are all, try them all, see where you get, right? Because they are all different. They've all been trained differently. So you may find that one works better than the other. Now, so that's one area where I really would like to see a better introduction is in that training. Right? Let's train our people using the knowledge, using the data to improve the process. Now, ultimately getting to that autonomous enterprise, we're going to want to see the AI start to develop processes based upon what it's learning. I still consider that a future. I think there's some good possible experimentation going on in that field right now. Nothing that I would allow my business to run off of in any way, shape, or form. But, it's good to know that this is happening. And of course, AI is a big, spectrum of technology, right? Because there's other aspects that I don't necessarily cover of AI. I cover more of the software. But yes, physical embodiment of AI, robotics, right? How is the introduction of automated machinery into your manufacturing plant, into your warehouse floor, going to change the mechanics. And we know that there's been some great work here. It's also extremely expensive. Right now I do think that, for multi-billion dollar corporations, that is a good option. But if you're a mid-sized manufacturer, if you're doing $500 million to $2 billion a year, a renovation like that could be very costly, and the payback period may not be for many, many years. And so you have to consider, is that a good use of capital? Or, can I leverage this technology myself and do things today to make improvements, but rely on humans to actually do some more of the work and improve, knowing that I have, you know, a human that needs to be able to execute on these tasks. I think that, you know, for mid-sized businesses and definitely small businesses, that there are better options for them financially when looking at this. So like I mentioned earlier, it's really hard to find concrete examples. I've listened to a number of videos. I've listened to a number of people doing talks on moderated panels. And again, you get very high level information, no details. And the thing that nobody seems to want to present is where were the pitfalls? What did you run into that was problematic? But I did find this one interesting. I expected better from McKinsey. I don't know why. But, you know, McKinsey, they had this one McKinsey Talks Operations about, and it has some really strong supply chain leaders. I did find one useful information or one particular section. I'm going to play that now and incorporate that. I really like what he had to say here.
I wanted to come back to you. We've been talking quite a bit in the last few minutes around logistics and distribution. What about in the front of the supply chain?
We worked on a very interesting example in order management. So if you think about a situation where the order dispatcher has bottlenecks, so there's multiple people in order management, each of them is responsible, so to say, to deliver the products to one out of four customers. And if you have a bottleneck, what then happens is that you kind of prefer one customer over the other. And that is often something that is grown-up rules that is not necessarily well documented. And what we did is we use the GenAI engine to talk to the order manager, to the individual people, multiple of them. And the idea was, hey, first to find out that is their rule set consistent? And we found out, no, it's not consistent. Is it following the company strategy? And it was not following the company strategy. Then we asked the GenAI engine to discuss with the order manager and to give feedback. And we asked the GenAI engine to optimize and to do basically in this bottleneck situation an allocation that would follow the company strategy, which was maximizing the EBITDA. And there was one customer out there that was a growing customer and to prioritize that customer. And that was quite interesting to see this multi-level reasoning, how well this applied. And with this, that let us think of, hey, isn't it that we have GenAI, so to say, as a team member? Isn't it we have a new colleague that is now the GenAI engine?
So what I really liked about what he had to say there, some interesting things. I think it backs up what I was explaining earlier about how to go about incorporating your data, capturing your data, and then leveraging GenAI as a resource. But some really key points that Newt and what he was saying about what, you know, people not being on the same page. How did you find that out? Well, again, going back to capturing that information, getting people to describe what they think the process is, and then using that as a knowledge base and saying, does Sarah's perspective or vision of how this works differ from Jim's? And identifying that, right, is so powerful and such a reality in today's organizations that people aren't playing from the same playbook. And when you have that, right, how can you be optimized? How can you work optimally? And so, you know, this effort not only discovered or helped uncover that people weren't on the same page, but that they weren't following what the rules were for the organization, which was, you know, improve EBITDA. Now, when he said that, I'm sitting there thinking, I don't know too many people on the warehouse floor or in the manufacturing floor that knows what EBITDA stands for. And this is a real problem, right? It's that people who work in your business, your day-to-day workers, they know their jobs very well, but they don't have access or participate in the growth of the big picture. They don't understand what the CEO understands, what the head of finance understands if they're running the shop floor, right? So how can you expect them to want to optimize EBITDA when they don't even know what EBITDA is, right? So there has to be some bridge that helps them to get there. And I like that they discussed that Gen AI didn't force them to have to understand the entire business in order for them to improve and optimize their area, but that it could take into consideration, this is what we want to do. We're not meeting that goal. What can Jim and Sarah do so that they can participate in that? And that, you know, just an example of, you know, McKinsey working with their clients, and they have, you know, some of the largest clients in the world, right? And I hate to say it, right arm, but, you know, I'd be very, very happy if I could spend time with some of the clients that they get to talk to and solve some of those problems, because they are so rich in opportunity to leverage this technology, apply this technology in ways that it hasn't been applied before. But Newt clearly had some good insight here, and I think it related well to what I was saying before, and hopefully provided an additional example. So like I said, I watched a lot of videos and looking for real details, and it's hard to find. A lot of it is vendors talking about what they've done from what their product can do for you versus what any real world production level product, you know, projects. And you know, you get answers like, you know, people on panels and they get asked the hard question, like, and, you know, a CEO is talking about, oh, I can talk about this now. This is public domain. We did it with so-and-so. And I can't give you the exact numbers off the top of my head, but it was really, you know, really powerful. And we, you know, we saved millions of dollars. And I'm sitting there, what'd you do? What did you do? What was this great project? What did you actually implement? And, you know, that's why I created this podcast and why I try to find people in, you know, out there to come on as guests who have real experience and talk about what worked, what didn't work, what can the technology do, what did you think the technology could do that it can't. I did find this one video. It's very interesting. It's from the Clue Kuhn Logistics University last year. Thank goodness the speaker is the IT person. So we're actually getting, you know, somebody senior in IT talking about it and giving real details, in particular about how they go about training a model so that they can then apply that logic or that model to picking in the warehouse.
Next thing is we start to train artificial intelligences. And I have here two products. We call them Llama and Adem. Llama is the following. What you can see here on the left bottom is left top is a warehouse. All these blue boxes are shelves, 100 columns, 10 rows, so 1,000 picking places on one side. So all over there might be 100,000 or 200,000 different places to pick goods in this warehouse. So this all is all over the warehouse. And the red line is the line of one person going through the warehouse picking goods from these shelves. And as you can see, starting in the top left, person step 1, 2, 3, so on, and latest is 31 in the bottom right. And altogether, it's something like 1,274 meters. Persons in the warehouse are going between 10 and 20 kilometers per day. So it is a good thing to decrease this distance, yeah, sure. And everyone say, okay, there are already algorithms like the Dijkstra just implemented. Sure, but I don't have only one person. We have 400 people in the warehouse going around. And so it means I have to distribute all the picking positions per day, 100,000 orders per day if it's a good day, to 400 people, and then the distance has to be short. That's not easy. And it's even not easy when you say, okay, we want to be fast with this. So it's you can have an algorithm, but it doesn't make sense to have the result on the next day. Yeah, I need it. Good orders are coming in the morning, and then I need the result 10 minutes later. And what we did here is we took all these picking positions, the white dots, put them through a black box, and that's it. And then we say, okay, artificial intelligence, please learn.
For those who are listening to the podcast versus watching the video, the speaker has a slide that's showing that they mapped all the endpoints of an individual who hit all these picking spots based on, I guess, maybe a pick to order or a pick to ticket or a pick to pallet type of scenario. And they then used the dot distribution to lay out in a two-dimensional space.
What are good dot distributions and what are bad dot distributions? And the artificial intelligence learns this. So for a human being, the difference between these pictures might be not so huge, and artificial intelligence can learn it. And the results are amazing. So,
great example of maybe edge AI, warehouses, manufacturing facilities. You may not want to use or need LLMs. You may not have to go out to a ChatGPT or a Claude. An SLM, a small language model, might be actually better for you, right? You can go to Hugging Face and get a model that has some of the basics of what you're needing it for, and then something like this you can train it so that it's really focused on what you're trying to do. Especially in this particular case, it's something that's run once a day, could be run on a basic server with a good GPU and some memory in it in your data center, so that you don't necessarily even need to then rely on the potential of an LLM model, which might change. All the time LLMs are getting deprecated for newer ones, and then you have to manage that as part of your production deployment. And here you'd be, pretty solid, fixed, it's not changing. And if it's working for you, then you have a solution. So really interesting to, that something like this as to consider if you're, especially around things like wanting to train and advise your warehouse management, your procurement, right? It can be done based on the data that you're collecting in your warehouse today. So that's going to do our episode for today. I thank you for listening as usual, and look forward to talking to you again soon. Hopefully my guest will be able to make it as planned. Thank you.